O Lord, our Sovereign, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory above the heavens. Out of the mouths of babes and infants, you have founded a bulwark because of your foes to silence the enemy and the avenger. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have established, what are human beings that you are mindful of them, mortals that you care for them? Yet you have made them a little lower than God and crowned them with glory and honor. You have given them dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under their feet, all sheep and oxen and also the beasts of the field, the birds of the air and the fish of the sea, whatever passes along the paths of the seas. O Lord, our Sovereign, how majestic is your name in all the earth. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. All of us have our favorite places. One of mine is a plot of land in northern New Mexico. It's a large plot, about 21,000 acres, a ranch owned by the Presbyterians. Ghost Ranch is an extraordinary place. The Red Rock landscape looks like a Roadrunner cartoon, if you still remember those. You can hike up the mesa, look for miles, or lose yourself in the Box Canyon. I have seen birds and animals there that I have never seen anywhere else. It's a magnificent spot. Yet even with all that marvelous scenery, the real show comes out after dark. The first evening star pops up within minutes of the sunset, and within a very short time, the sky is illumined by thousands of stars. There are no streetlights within 50 miles, no distractions on the horizon. If you lie down on your back in the field and gaze up toward the heavens, it is astonishing how much you can see. And you feel small. Can you remember a time when you felt like that? Sometime back, I attended a lecture by Dr. Margaret Geller, an astronomer at Harvard. Her name is revered in astrophysics. When she has the itch to look deeply at the heavens, she phones up a governmental observatory in the mountains of southern Arizona, and they always take her call. Dr. Geller spends her time peering through enormous telescopes, and she describes her life's work as mapping the universe. She asked our crowd, "Would you like to see some of what I see?" And without waiting for an answer, she started clicking through the pictures. We saw swirls of light and colors we've never even dreamed of seeing. She mentioned distances that my little brain could not calculate. The man next to me gazed at the images, then wiped away a tear, stroking his chin, too dumbstruck to move. Now, the poet who composes Psalm 8 is lying on his back beneath a star-filled sky. The Milky Way spills across the black velvet expanse. Darkness is punctured by a billion points of light. The moon smiles kindly. The poet exhales awe and then feels ridiculously small. Speaking to a God he cannot see, a God he trusts is above and beyond it all. He says, "When I look at your heavens, when I look at the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars you have established, who do I think I am? Who do we think we are?" The answer is that we are human beings. We are not mules, and we are not angels. We are fashioned as human beings. That is our lot. The dictionary says the Latin origin of the word human comes from humus, from the soil. Just like another old story from Genesis, God scooped up some mud from the riverbank, shaped it to resemble the divine image, blew holy breath into the nostrils and brought it alive, then gave the first critter a name, Adam, a Hebrew word that means dirt creature. This is who we are. And ever since, whenever we move too far from the soil, life gets bent out of shape. Now there's a parenthesis around all this. In Psalm 8, the poet exclaims the same line at the beginning and at the end. O Lord, our sovereign, how majestic is your name in all the earth. He says it twice, for God has a really big name. In the Christian church, we name God as Trinity, but in doing so, we only point to the one who is behind everything we see and cannot see. God had said to Moses, I am, I will be, that is my name. And it suggests God is the source and destination of everything, everything. And if such immensity does not make us feel small, we're really not paying attention. Sometimes we recover a sense of God's size when we go outdoors. And then we begin to believe the illusion of modern life that we can manage and even reduce the universe. We're tempted to presume that we humans can control our environment. But if we stand outside as a summer storm blows in, the sheer force of it can stun us into submission. So was the claim of my good friend who reported on the recent tornadoes in his city of Nashville. The destruction stunned him. The trees had been yanked up out of the soil, spilled around like toothpicks on the kitchen floor. Have you ever seen the pictures of a city block flattened, he asked. And I want to know, does anybody still hang on to the myth that human beings are in control of much of anything? True wisdom begins when we perceive our total dependence on God. We live and breathe flat-footed on the ground thanks to a God who thinks gravity is a good idea. When John Calvin, the great theologian, wrote his most famous book, he said, our wisdom consists entirely of two parts, the knowledge of God and the knowledge of ourselves. Without knowledge of God, there is no knowledge of self. Now, there's somebody who knew the eighth psalm. Psalm 8 directs us to look to the grand glory of the heavens, unmanageable and immense. And then the poet invites us to trust there's a God behind it all, in the thick of it all. And when speech begins in the human throat again, the question arises, who do we think we are in light of that? Now, you and I know the limits of being human. We have only so many days, and time is short. Our bodies can bear only so much. We cannot protect ourselves from the forces of tornadoes, only send in the ambulances and the bulldozers to handle the wreckage. As we have feared for the last 12, 13, 14 weeks, illness might strike any of us at any time. And we really don't know what will happen this day or tomorrow. All the while, we're prone to thinking an awful lot about ourselves in a universe that remains strangely indifferent to our small concerns. Anthony DeMello describes this paradox in his book, 1 Minute Wisdom. Before I was 20, he said, I never worried about what other people thought about me. But after I was 20, I worried endlessly about the impressions I made and how people were evaluating me. And then he said, it was only after I turned 50 that I realized nobody hardly thought of me at all. We presume ourselves to be the center of everyone's attention and end up performing for an audience that is not there. But the psalm says the astonishing thing is that God takes notice. The God who created quasars and moonbeams is the God who knit together our DNA and says to the baptized child, you are mine, all mine. The Holy One who tosses the comets across the sky and twirls the wind like cotton candy is the same God who weeps when people don't use their noggins or when they don't take rational health precautions or they don't love strangers as neighbors, or they can't keep their hands off of other people's stuff. The mystery of the Holy Trinity is that the infinite, eternal God pays specific attention to us. This is what gives dignity to each person. God regards us. We are not here by mistake. We are not accidents. Certainly we have our bad hair days. We burn the barbecue chicken. We crash our cars in the oak trees. Yet God regards us, setting us a little lower than the angels of heaven. Granting us this stature, God gives us responsibility for one another and for all the critters. And if this were not enough, God has such high regard for us that God becomes a human being. And this is the greatest affirmation for our species. Yet it is possible, isn't it? It is possible to fall short of this dignity. And one of the worst expressions is when some people think they possess more dignity than they will grant to others. They do not realize how they are demeaning themselves when they are demeaning somebody else. And for the past 10 days, we've been living through a time of national brutality. This has been hard. I take it as just the latest chapter of a 400-year story of treating people poorly because of the color of their skin. Just last Wednesday, I had the honor of conversing on the phone with a man that I have respected for many, many years. He recently retired from the faculty of Yale and went to his farm in the pine woods of northern Alabama. At the peak of his career, Willie Ruff played his French horn for the Queen of England. He was the first jazz musician to perform in Russia, the first jazz musician to perform in China. When he taught at Yale, he began a musical outreach program that reached 180,000 children in the New Haven district. And yet, he said, "For most of my life as an African American, I have been treated as 3/5 of a human being." His childhood schools were segregated. When he enlisted in the Air Force, he was sent to a segregated Air Force base. He was, in fact, one of the Tuskegee Airmen, a famed squadron that served so valiantly in World War II. And he did claim his God-given dignity, even when the systems of white privilege did whatever they could to rob him of it. So I'm thinking about these things these days. So what is a protest for justice? It is a demand for human dignity. When voices long silenced speak up, they must be heard. Now that is not a license to smash store windows or steal televisions. That kind of destruction is another denial of human dignity. But to speak up when you have been put down so long, this is what happens when people declare they are children of God, just like everybody else. There is a dignity to claim. I think of Sarah Moore Grimke, the 19th century abolitionist attorney and judge. She was an early leader for the women's right to vote, and in a letter once she wrote, "I ask no favors for my sex. I surrender not our claim to equality. All I ask of our brethren is that they will take their feet from off our necks and permit us to stand on that ground that God designed us to occupy." I look to the stars. I perceive the immensity of a great and holy God, says the psalmist. And I wonder, who are we that God creates us equally, that God loves us equally, that God should endow us with great ability and great responsibility. We are the children of God. All of us. 3 weeks before George Floyd was murdered, back when the COVID-19 pandemic was the main thing on the national mind, former President George W. Bush pointed the way forward, and he wrote, "Empathy and simple kindness are essential, powerful tools of national recovery. Even at an appropriate social distance, we can find ways to be present in the lives of others, to ease their anxiety and to share their burdens. Our differences are small in the face of this shared threat. In the final analysis, we are equally vulnerable and equally wonderful in the sight of God. We rise or fall together." Can we hear in that the importance of human dignity? I think we do. And I am reminded of a well-polished story that, of all people, Mr. Rogers loved to tell. Years ago, the Special Olympics was held in Seattle. It came time for the 100-meter dash, and 10 or 9 contestants assembled at the starting line. At the starter's pistol, they took off. A few yards into the race, one boy tripped and fell and banged up his knee and started to cry. The other children heard him. They slowed down, some turned around, and a couple of them ran back to him. One girl bent over, kissed the boy, and said, "This will make it better." Then they helped him to his feet, locked arms with him, and walked together to the finish line. And when they did that, everyone in the stadium leaped to their feet, clapped, whistled, and cheered. People are still telling that story years later, and you know why. In case we missed it, Fred Rogers tells the moral of the story. "Deep down," he says, "we know that what matters in this life is more than winning for ourselves. What matters is helping others win too. Even if it means slowing down and changing our course now and then." The God who made the heavens has entrusted us with dignity. All of us.